ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
Why can't we get competitive college football playoff semifinals? Would an expanded field help that? And how will Alabama Georgia version 2 2021 be different, if at all? This is ESPN College Football Podcast for whatever day it is, January 3rd, 2022, day of the week. No idea. I think it's Monday, but it's been a great fun weekend of college football. Reese Davis and David Pollack along with you. David, let's start with briefly what we just saw over the weekend. The other bowl games, the other New Year's Six games, were far more entertaining than the playoff. So let's start with that. And hello to, for those of you watching the tape feed, hello to Lindsay Pollack, who just poked in her head behind David over the shoulder. Hi, Lindsay. Good morning. What did you think first of the lack of competition once again? Now 13 times in 16 semifinals that the game's been decided by double digits in the college football playoff era.
You know, me and Fowler and Desmond had a bunch of speaking engagements beforehand with the Orange Bowl and Capital One and doing a bunch of stuff. And, you know, Fowler's plea was always just please be a good game. And every time my answer was, yeah, I don't know if you're going to get that. I don't know if you'll get a hyper-competitive game. But I think there's been, you know, clearly dominant teams. That's the problem. Like the Clemson team with Trevor Lawrence was just so dominant during the year. Joe Burrow and LSU, so dominant. Last year, Alabama, good God. I mean, nobody was touching them or getting even close to them. So I think we've seen that throughout time. There's just been clearly one or two teams that are better. This year, I mean, Reese, we were looking at the end here and we were going, okay, there's four or five teams possibly in play for these last two spots at the end of the season. But we were like, oh, yeah, well, this team's, you know, Georgia's really, really good. And who's going to be the next team? And obviously Alabama asserted itself and clearly stated they were the next best team. But it's if we expand the playoffs, we're going to get more uncompetitive games. I mean, you don't agree with that?
I don't. And I'm going to tell you why. You're right about the dominant teams, historically great teams in some of those areas, and even teams that didn't make the field sort of rose to that level, in my judgment. You mentioned the great Trevor Lawrence team. Well, prior to Alabama's poor performance in the championship game that year, they had done the same thing to everybody. She had two teams that year. The year that Trevor got to the championship game against LSU, Ohio State was right there on the edge too. Here's the reason I'm not sure that's the case in an expanded field, but there also may be a downside to this. You and I have talked about 27% of the games were won by underdogs, some of them in inexplicable fashion this year. If you expand the field, you increase the chances of something like that happening. A power team not having its best day, ball bouncing off a tuba, you know, going the way of the underdog. Then what happens, because like I mentioned on game day in the now infamous segment, there's always a flip side to whatever decision you make. If you do that, you're going to get a couple of teams upset. And sooner or later, in a bigger field, the dominant 2020 Alabama, the dominant 2019 LSU, they're going to step in an empty elevator shaft. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. And then what's going to happen? You're going to get a next round, a championship game or something against a really good team and a team that's not so good. You see this in the basketball tournament all the time. 15 seed somehow beats the 2 seed. So then they go into the next round against the 7 or whoever, and they get beat by 1,000.
It's not basketball. Yeah. I don't think. Here's what I'd say to this, to the other side of that. When you talk about football and when you talk about a playoff and you talk about all these guys that play, obviously 11 starters on both sides of the football, it's more of a depth competition than it is in basketball. Basketball, you can have a couple good players and still compete, I think, with a high level of teams, especially for a while, and keep it close. I don't think it's the same basketball thing, but here's the thing. So this, just if we go just this year and you go Georgia and Alabama. So there, if you expand it now, are you talking about giving them buys?
It depends on what you do. I'm not a fan of buys. Okay. I think you're going to do it. I would like to for it to be even 8 or 16, but I know it's probably going to be 12.
So would it be fair to assume that this year that those two teams would have played 4 games in a playoff scenario like that? Those 4 games had a very slim chance of being competitive.
Right. No, okay. I agree with you there. What I'm saying is that one of them has a bad day. I mean, that we've seen that happen through the history of the sport. We've seen it happen this year. The best team doesn't always win. The team that plays the best. Luke Fickell said that going into the Alabama game. Hey, Luke's a smart football guy, as you know. He believed in his team. If you injected truth serum in him, he knew Alabama was better than them. You know, I mean, he knew.
They have to play phenomenal.
He knew have to play phenomenally, and Alabama would probably have to make a mistake or two here or there. Now, you don't say that going into the game, but everyone knows it's true. And I will admit to being fooled by Georgia and Michigan. I thought that Georgia was better than Michigan, but I thought Michigan was going to win the game because I thought they were I thought that they would be able to match up a little bit better, and I thought maybe they just had a little mojo in their favor. You know,
well, they did.
I was wrong. I was wrong about that.
Huh? Was there a hotter team in the country than Michigan? I mean, it was awesome to watch them throughout the season. And you could argue too, the Michigan State game, they played, you know, they controlled that game for a lot of the game. Obviously,
should've
Michigan
won the
State
game.
Did a great job, made plays, but
that's what I'm, David, that's what I'm talking about in terms of the really good teams. And I know maybe obviously Michigan's not Georgia or Alabama, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. Michigan should have won that game, but they didn't. You know, so things kind of fell against them. Kenneth Walker made a couple plays. They lost. When you put out the extra potholes, that's going to happen at some point. I don't know if that necessarily means it's better.
It is. You know why it's better? Because in the grand scheme of things, the conversation we had Saturday, if we want to keep excitement for players, if we want to keep engagement for players, and if you want to, you know, if you want to make football very, very competitive and as great as possible, as long as possible, if you want to make the Sugar Bowl mean something to all you guys that watched the Sugar Bowl growing up and thought it was amazing, and the Rose Bowl, and if you want to make all that extremely relevant and want to make all that exciting again, which the Rose Bowl, by the way, doesn't have to apologize. That was the more I think if we expanded the playoffs and encompassed those bowl games every year in some capacity, I think you will make them more exciting. So listen, I don't think we'll get more competitive games. I think in the middle half, not the top tier, Reese, I think the middle half will have some upsets and it'll be fun, great games, just like we saw in the bowl games. We're probably not going to get a different outcome, but I think we'll get more excitement for longer with more guys involved. So how is that not winning?
No, if that happens, it's true. But David, throughout history, elite teams have face planted, sometimes on big stage, sometimes on mediocre stages. Sometimes they do it in October and under the old systems, whether it was BCS or college football playoff, or even way back in the day, just winning their conference without a conference championship game. There have always been cases of teams sort of inexplicably face planting. I'll give you an example. Now, this is probably, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say that team wasn't the same in September as it was at the end, and that's accurate. But Ohio State in 2014, the first year of the playoff, came very close to not making the playoff field. Some would argue that maybe they shouldn't have, and that even to this day, despite the fact that they won it, is a very valid argument that TCU or Baylor should have made the field rather than Ohio State. Because Ohio State had a horrible, near disqualifying loss to an average Virginia Tech team at home by 2 touchdowns. And that type of thing has always happened. Now, the Buckeye team improved, and at the end, certainly they, you know, I would have favored putting them in. I thought they were better, although TCU had a good argument that year. But we won't go backwards and say, I'm just saying that's an example of on a given night, in a certain situation, even at the end of the season, unusual things can happen, and unusual things that can cause, and then maybe you don't get the best team. The best thing about the small field is that you increase the likelihood that the team that was the best all season, you don't guarantee it, but you increase the likelihood that the best teams all season, one of them will win the championship. A larger field decreases that, but people like upsets. They like drama. And so there's upside to both. I'm just saying that it cuts both ways. And the other thing I would like to bring up about making the bowls important with you, and I hear what you're saying, but I worry about the fans, because I bet you're already seeing it at Georgia. I know you're seeing it at Alabama, and you've seen it at Clemson too. People start, and it's not that they, sometimes it's because financially they can't afford it. Sometimes it's because their job, their business, their kids' commitments, whatever it might be, they can't afford to do both trips. Now, if you add a third layer of trips, now do you lose the atmosphere? Do you lose what we saw in the Rose Bowl with the Utah fans who were amazing there? Do you lose that because we got to wait until the next round and see if our team wins because I can't take off all these days from work, you know?
Going to home campus.
I agree with that, but then that doesn't help your bowl situation. That's what I would do. I would go on home campuses for the early ones.
Yeah, I think you go on a home campus for a round, and then you find a way now to encompass as many, you know, as you can. But it's either way, it's the sport's awesome. The sport's fun. Mm-hmm. These conversations are a heck of a lot of fun. But I think the only thing holding back the expansion, it was, you know, as well as I do, Reese, this thing was funneling in a direction where it was about to expand. And then, you know, the Oklahoma Texas domino did not sit well with a lot of people. And now it's a little bit more of a struggle. Now we're struggling. Like it's legit a power struggle between the teams that now formed an alliance and trying to work together and trying to not give too much power to one brand. So either way, we got to get our heads together. We got to get a commissioner of the sport and start to work together to find solutions to these problems. Cause I think we can, I don't think these are solutions or problems that we can't somehow try to work and just continue to get it better.
Well, call me up and let me know the next time you see someone give up one of two things voluntarily, power or money. And I'm not talking about being benevolent and generous. People will give up money for generous causes, but power, people do not like to give up power. Humans, I don't just mean in football, humans don't like to give up power. Now, you see that exemplified in every walk of life, every day, from the beginning of time. That's why I'm skeptical about a quick fix commissioner and reorganization quickly, because that means somebody somewhere conceding power. Even if one of the conference commissioners were deemed to be the commissioner of the sport, you know what that means? That means that conference of where a person theoretically would be commissioner would be giving up power. They were like, well, why would we do that? I don't know. I can't think of why we would do that. If you bring someone in,
like Reese Davis giving up his singles every game day, when you see that single where it zooms in on his face and he delivers this beautiful soliloquy right before your eyes with usually a hint of sarcasm or a jab at someone, it's just not going to happen. Like, we're not going to give that up.
Why would we give that up? You like yours too. You like your single. I mean, exactly. And you're making my point. People don't voluntarily give that up. Although at the end of game day, as I digress a little bit, almost invariably, we are up against the clock. Our producer, Jim Guerrero, is, you know, freaking out in the truck, pulling out the remainder of his hair. And then he will say, I need you to get me to the sound quickly, in which I take one of my leads, which is probably 20 seconds on a bad day for me, or 35 on a good one, baby. You know, and I'll get it down to about 12. And before Jimmy can, or sometimes 8 if necessary. And before Jimmy can say anything, I get in the talk back button, which is where I can talk to Jimmy and America doesn't hear me. And I simply say two words, you're welcome. That's what I usually say other than that, I'm not giving up the camera, Dave.
We let the people behind the curtain a little bit, you know, let them know a little bit about Reese. And We should give more about stories throughout the season about things that happen and go down.
Okay, give me one then. Before we talk Bama Georgia for a few minutes, give me one.
Well,
you're gonna do something to embarrass me. Are you gonna?
Well, no. The problem is that, you know, like, I can always throw you under the bus. I'm always worried about who I throw under the bus because I don't want to. It's you know me. I'm doing it in a playful manner. It's not.
I know.
To attack anybody. But I thought your comment to Kirk the other day was pretty amazing when you were walking up on set. What you don't see, guys, is like Reese is doing a singles of himself on the side set, and Kirk, he's walking up and Kirk's harassing him, and which is awesome, by the way. Like, commercial breaks, a lot of times we're just picking at each other back and forth, and to which you made a smart retort, I like, to Kirk as you walked up.
I did. Do you want me? Okay. It was the lead. It was a Michigan Georgia lead. I told a story about Aiden Hutchinson from the awards season about wearing no-show socks it rubbed some minor blisters on the back of his feet. And by the way, I saw a little reaction on Twitter. It had no impact on the game. This was like a one night thing where you're wearing new shoes and a tuxedo and it kind of bugs. And so I was teasing Aiden about it. And the point was, Stetson Bennett couldn't count on Aiden chasing him in brand new stiff wingtip shoes. He's going to be wearing his football shoes and you're getting full fledged 97 and all of that. So I do this league, and the whole time Herb Street is off on the main set and he's counting like a basketball official counting backcourt before you're too long, you know, and he's counting, he's killing me about how long the lead is or whatever. So as I walk back up on the set, I don't remember exactly what I said, but you probably do, but it was something like, there are a lot of people who can give me a hard time about long leads, but not you, pal, because you can see some clock too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Kirk is the one who taught me that when the producer gets in your ear and says, you know, hurry up, hurry up. When I first started in the business, he, you know, Fitting would be like, wrap it up, 10 seconds. And I'd be like, Alabama wins. Like, I didn't know how to handle it because he just, and then Kirk was like, hey, kid, listen, they'll find the time, okay? That's merely a suggestion. He was like, finish your thought, finish what you have to say. They'll find the time on the back end. And he's right, by God, because right, I'll just sit there and finish my thought. But Desmond obviously made a quote about that on game day when we're sitting there going back and forth. And Desmond's like, wait a minute, didn't he say to wrap this up 3 minutes ago? And me, you, and Kirk might have been still chewing on the bone. So
yeah, we were a little bit. And Desmond was funny. Desmond's like, well, I'm not playing by the rules anymore. I just watched that segment back this morning, in fact. And I said to Des, but I was like, come on, Des, somebody's got to play by the rules. You got to help us a little bit here. So, but yeah, it's going behind the curtain that from my, you know, how many ever years, almost 27 years at ESPN and 30 some odd years in the business now, that's what makes a great producer. That's what separates everybody who produces at the level that we do it. They're elite and they're great. But what separates the truly elite are the ones who feel moments. And even if we are absolutely crushing them on time, they go, it's worth it, I'll fix it. And, you know, that's what we have with our guys. Fitting is, you know, the lead Fitting, who's now an executive at ESPN, is the best I've ever worked with in that regard. He's amazing, got an amazing feel for that, always has. Jim Guerrero, who's our normal producer on game day, and Jeff Brown, who happened to be producing the Rose Bowl show that morning. All of them are excellent at that. And I work with Jeff in basketball. He's really, really good at that. And Jim, you know, Jim's done everything in the world and TV, so they're really good at it. But like I always remind you guys sometimes, and well, we are going behind the scenes now, and we'll talk football in a minute, I promise. When Jim or Jeff or back in the day, Lee or whoever, when they're getting on you about time, the rest of us on air, we get to walk away from the time thing. We go, oh, gee, Jim, I'm sorry we crushed you there. We'll do better next time. And we'll go, yeah, okay, let's watch these games. And we're away from it. The producers have to answer the email about why they were in break at the top of the hour or why this segment got cut short or why this soundbite did. They have to answer. They have to live with all of it. So that's where the teamwork comes in. And we joke with Desmond about, yeah, we'll run through that stop sign, whatever. You have to be judicious about it, and you have to trust the producer. Sometimes Jim has done this in the past. He goes, I know this is good, man. I have to go now, you know? And so you've got to work as a team like
and
that.
It means I have to go to the bathroom. He has to pee for the 30th.
You don't have to go that far behind the scenes and tell him everything, right? You don't have to tell him everything. Before we move on, two things I want to mention. First, listen to SV Pod with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve every Tuesday morning. Scott and Steve going to share their thoughts on the college football playoff semifinal and week 17 of the NFL. Plus, they'll tell you what they hate this week. Follow SV Pod wherever you listen to podcasts and watch NBA Today 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show as a podcast. I've debated about whether I'm going to bring this up, but now that I've said this, I have to. I went back and watched a segment that people reacted to on social media, pulling Kirk's one sentence out of that long discussion out and seizing on it and turning it into something it wasn't. I'm not going to use the phrase out of context because it wasn't out of context, but he did thoroughly clarify what he meant when he said, you know, players don't love football in this era. He went back and clarified it. He was talking about a segment of players who look solely at the NFL or bust, and everything else is a far second. And there's nothing wrong with having that goal. And it was a perspective, and he clarified it. And, you know, the reaction I saw to it angered me from a lot of our colleagues in the media, from some fans. And look, you have to wear it. When you do what we do for a living, it's incumbent on you to say exactly what you mean. And inevitably, all of us, I've done it, you've done it. Inevitably, sometimes we aren't going to be as precise, or in this particular case, a little more broad than what we meant. But it was really unfortunate to me that people didn't listen to the whole thing, or chose not to listen to the whole thing when he went back and clarified, because some of his points are completely valid. And he went back and even said the phrase, I'm not talking about all of them, you know, and yet, you know, to attach injuries to it and then use Kirk's status to be able to get more attention for what you want to say, it really ticked me off. I know it's part of the business, but I think you tweeted about it. To know how much he cares about this sport, and to know his attachment to it, not only from an emotional level, but from having sons who play, and from his relationships with players now, and his desire to want the best for them. I mean, to portray that as something more than just an in-the-moment, overly broad statement, which, by the way, was completely clarified within the same segment, irritated me. But, you know, like I joked with Felica about getting boobs, sometimes you get a fastball in the ribs and you got to wear it. And, you know, it might not have been the right thing. It wasn't the right thing. But anyway.
It's very interesting that there's several people that in the media that do our job that have to be negative all the time, like about our sport, like that our sport is so great that we get to cover it. And like, you're as positive as it gets, and Kirk is as positive as it gets most of the time. Like, I think it's just interesting that we have to take it to, you know, negative town every time we can find an outlet to take it to negative town. And I just, you know, for me, that was frustrating. It's frustrating to watch on multiple levels. Just, you know, there's people that address that in the bowl game, that coaches that actually had statements about it. That was pretty interesting. I just, I know what he meant. I know what he said. I can just tell you, as somebody that's been in this business, week one, Kirk pulled me aside after Charlotte and was like, hey man, just, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, we got to protect the game. The game is so important, and we got to make sure that we take this responsibility, like, really, really positively, and we have to protect the game of football. And I look at it like this, and I was just like, man, like, there's just no one that loves this sport and that wants to protect it more than him. And it's impressive to be around, and I've learned a lot, you know, in my time being around it. So I would encourage you, if you have a comment, that's fine. But just like our society, we tend to watch a Twitter clip of 5 seconds, and we tend to watch a news clip of 5 seconds, and that's how we make a lot of our opinions. Like Reese just said, go back and listen to it. Go back and listen to the whole segment, formulate your opinion, and then see what you have to say about it. I think it would be interesting if you did.
Yeah, and I agree. And I'll leave it at this too. When he says protect the game, because I'm learning a lesson from the reaction here, he's not talking about, and nor am I, because I believe we should protect the game too. And protecting the game sometimes means critiquing the game. Right. It means critiquing the way it's administered. It means critiquing the way it's played. And it means critiquing the people inside it. And that also doesn't leave us immune from being critiqued. And heaven knows we all get that. And that's fair. That's fair enough. You know,
we like
fair.
You.
Fair enough.
Bring it on. Send them all my way. If y'all got anything to say,
you enjoy it. You enjoy awesome. It. And, you know, the thing is, his perspective is valid. His heart was in the right place, and he didn't intend, and further verbally clarified exactly what he meant later, that he was talking about the segment of which it exists. And no one would deny that there are a number of players that view it NFL or bust. And that actually is okay too, by the way. Players have a right to view it that way. It's a short career, as no one knows better than you. They have a right to view it any way they want. You know, and if that's the way they want to view it, I support it. If they don't want to play in the bowl game, I support it. My initial point in the whole thing was we have to find a way to make them want to. I keep hearing things like, well, play them, attach the NIL contract to it. They don't get paid if they don't play. No, no, no. You can't make people do something like that because no matter how much NIL money there is, it pales in comparison to what a potential NFL contract will be. So what you have to do is make them want to attach stakes to these games, make them want to make it valuable. That's the charge. And whatever form that takes is the form it takes. No doubt that whoever shows up to play wearing red and black or crimson and white on Monday, January 10th in Indianapolis will be all in, ready to play and excited about the opportunity. In Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama, David, I have, outside of the first year when he was establishing the program, there have been times over that since 2008 now and the entire, 14 and 15 years when I've said, no, I don't know if they're going to win this game or not, but I've never, ever, ever been surprised that they won a game. Never. Until the SEC championship game. I was legit surprised they won the game. And it wasn't because I didn't think they were good. I thought they were not quite. I thought the matchup was tough for them on the offense, Alabama's offensive line versus the Georgia defensive line. They won. What will be different in Indianapolis this time? Because Georgia's a favorite again, despite losing by 17 and really being out of it for the most part by early third quarter.
Yeah.
What, they're still a favorite. So that means people still see some of what I saw going into the first one. What will be different this time?
Well, if you're an Alabama fan, you're going, we own Georgia. We own you. Like, this is what we've done. We beat you consistently. It doesn't matter who comes in, who goes out, we win. Like, so I don't think that Alabama fans are going to feel any kind of different way from that standpoint. I also thought Alabama fans, by the way, going into that game was the least confident I've ever seen them going into that Georgia
Correct.
Game. So
yeah.
I think that had something to say about it. But listen, we always gauge levels of interest. We're always gauging psyche. We're always gauging, who wants it more. And here's the thing. You can try to create that edge all you want to, Reese. We can try to create it at work. We can try to create it every day. But there is something to the fact, though, when you tell me I'm out of this thing, I'm done, I'm gone if I don't win. Like, when I'm backed in the corner like Alabama was, and there is no tomorrow, it's I got to win this game or else there's a great chance I'm not going to the college football playoff. I don't care what you say. When you're desperate and you're fighting for your life to put food on your table, like, you're going to fight with everything you have. Georgia was the opposite. Georgia was sitting in the middle of the room as the king going, hey, you want to bring the food over here? Yeah, I know, a little bit more, like, fat, happy. So if you're I just think from that standpoint, I think there is something to that. Is that the whole thing? No. Bryce Young played great, about time. They threw the ball, they attacked Georgia's secondary. I'm just saying from a motivational standpoint, I'm pretty convinced it could be a different story when these two play, because now both are playing for the same thing, and it's lose, go home, win, you get to hold a championship.
I brought this up in a meeting that we had as we go back behind the scenes, and I want to do an exhaustive piece on all of the mental conditioning that teams do, because it is fascinating to me why it's real and why the phenomenon you just described works over and over. Alabama genuinely felt disrespected going into that game. I was standing on the sideline when Will Anderson walked out for the coin toss, and I was like, oh, somebody's got a problem today. And I mean, not that they don't always have a problem when he's on the field, but there was, you could feel that. But what you said about Georgia baffles me. Because of what you said first, because of the way Alabama has just crushed their souls from the blackout game with Julio Jones in 2008. And now Georgia staff member Scott Cochran saying this is going to be a blankety blank funeral because they're wearing black.
We remember that 1,000%, and we chronicle it, and that's our job. In 2008, how many of these kids were born?
No, maybe so, but I'm just getting started. Then there was the 2012 SEC championship game. Then the, I think it was probably 15 in the rain when Georgia was favored and Alabama just destroyed them. Then there was Tua. Right, yep. Then there was Mac Jones to Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and over and over and over. And some of them do remember that. And from an institutional psyche, that is a part. And this is why I find it baffling that Georgia wasn't on razor's edge, ready to absolutely put them down once and for all in that game. Now, maybe it happens in Indianapolis finally. I don't know. But here's the thing, David, about the psyche. Watching that game, 10-0 Georgia, third and I think two. And I said to a friend on the sideline, I said, Georgia stops them here, gets the ball back, scores, this is over. Instead,
Jameson Williams.
Bryce Young, Jameson Williams, house call, it's 10-7. And Georgia started then from that point forward feeling, oh my gosh, this is crimson and white with the numbers on the side of the headgear and the script A on the collar, and they got tight. That is the biggest challenge for the Bulldogs in Indianapolis on Monday night. Now, if they do get the stop and they go up 17-0, they'll probably dance around and strut. And like I've told you many times, if they ever beat them, they're not going to beat them on a last second field goal. They're going to hammer them. Maybe that happens on Monday night. Maybe it doesn't. If it gets tight, I'm going to need to see Georgia answer the bell against that team. I'm going to need to see them not get tight, not make the mistake, not bust the coverage, not get the pass batted down, not throw the interception. I'm going to need to see it until I believe it.
By the way, ain't nothing wrong with that. That's facts. I mean, that's like, until you do it, what do we talk about Clemson? We've talked about Clemsoning for years. Mm-hmm. Speaking of guys getting roasted, Palmer got hammered. Remember, like the Palmer Rose signs and all that stuff. He got eviscerated, but he wasn't wrong. I mean, and Georgia's been right there so much, so many times. Here's what I'll say. This is also the first time, if you're going to talk about it from the SEC championship standpoint, this is the first time that I think, in my opinion, I hate when people say, in my opinion, by the way, that's just stupid that I just said that.
Well, of course, if you weren't saying it, it wouldn't be your opinion, right?
It's absolutely dumb. I'm an idiot. But this is the first time I have seen Kirby Smart have a better, more talented team. He has a more talented team than Alabama. I don't care what you say. I fully believe this Georgia team is more talented than Alabama. It's, if you go position by position, you're going to take a lot more Georgia guys than you in the past. That wasn't a debate. You take a heck of a lot more Alabama guys. So, mm-hmm. You know, you got some demons to exercise. You got some mm-hmm. things you got to work out. But there's no excuses, Reese. Here's the thing. Every time Alabama's played Georgia, they didn't get another shot. They didn't get that extra. They didn't get another mm-hmm. chance. They finished fifth in the country. They play LSU. They finished fifth in the country. They play Alabama in the national championship. And they're done. There is no tomorrow. You got another chance now. Like, this is the most sweet way you could ever alleviate this burden or figure it out or conquer this quest would be you get revenge on them in the national championship when you get to hold the trophy and say bye-bye and let you walk off the field.
And the way both are recruiting, it might not be the last time they meet on multiple championship stages. From an XO standpoint, and there you're right, there are no excuses for either side, but there are factors. And Alabama, I agree with you. I think you would take more Georgia guys because what Alabama has right now, because what it was 8 of the top 38 picks in the NFL draft from last year left, a lot of their talent and their elite talent in their freshman or redshirt freshman or sophomore classes, and it's they're reloading for sure. And they've got talented receivers coming in for John Mechie. But not having the 1-2 punch, not being able to use Mechie sort of as a de facto extension of the running game, because they're probably not going to line up and run Brian Robinson for 200 yards against that defense. I'll go out on a limb and say, since we've given some absolute guarantees this year, that will not happen.
He won't
that will not happen. They were able to use Mechie extension of the running game. That's gone. So there is also an actual XO factor on the game that is significantly different from the first meeting.
Well, but here's the thing. And here's what's if you're watching football, what's the most important position on the field?
Quarterback.
It's quarterback. And that's where Alabama has a distinct edge. And that's where you saw in the first. And listen, you can take that as a knock on Stetson Bennett if you want. There's one Heisman Trophy winner, and it's right. Bryce Young. I mean, there's not very many guys in the CJ Stroud is a great, great quarterback. He can't do what Bryce Young can do. Bryce Young can negotiate pockets and big people and break tackles, and he sees stuff happen before, and his heart rate just is like, hey, bro, pass that. Oh, wait a minute. Quick. Like, oh, yeah, okay, not him. I mean, it's unbelievable, like, what he's able to accomplish. And then Will Anderson. You know, this is a guy that is the most disruptive defensive force in all of college football. Georgia's got a bunch of them that are forces, but they don't have any 31s. I mean, that guy single-handedly wrecks game plan. If you go back and watch that Georgia game, there was two or three plays. One play I remember off the top of my head where Will Anderson doesn't make the play, which he defeats one or two blocks and grabs McIntosh and pulls him down. It's a house call. It's a different game. Like, he makes game-changing plays, you know, pretty consistently. So, you know, they still – Alabama has a ton of talent. It's young. Jameson Williams is the best receiver probably in college football this year, putting up the most production. So there's a couple areas where there is, you know, differences. But as a team, man for man, I mean, Georgia's – you talk about – Jordan Davis staying for another year. Devontae Wyatt staying for another year. Mm-hmm. Like, guys that came back to do what they're doing right now. So now go finish it.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Alabama has a significant edge at quarterback, and they have the best player on the field at any position in Will Anderson. But the other positions, I agree with you. I think Georgia has the edge. And I want to say this before we get out of here too. That's not a knock on Stetson Bennett. So you and I try not to do this very often, but I would like for you now, and I'm going to do the same, to stretch your rotator cuff and pat yourself on the back here, because you and I have been steadfast in our Stetson Bennett belief club. And I believed in him last year, even after it got sideways last year. I was like, they're being too careful with him. They're worried too much about him. He's fine. They'll just let him play. I was really happy for him for that performance against Michigan. He's good, man. Everybody might as well just accept it. Is he Bryce Young? No. Is he Joe Burrow? No. He's not that, but he's good. Not many people are those things. He's really good. He's a very, very good college quarterback, and he's capable of leading them to the national championship.
Yeah, and he's got to do it one more time, right? Like, he's got another big stage against Alabama, which he can do, you know, one more time. But you saw the feet. The scrambling ability, just making people miss, scrambling, getting a first down. You saw him taking deep shots down the field, playing aggressively. So I think Monken called a phenomenal game with him, and let him go be him and let him be aggressive, because you got to do that against Alabama too. But the bottom line is this, Reese. If Stetson Bennett wasn't a walk-on, this has been my point all year long. If he wasn't a walk-on, last week I was answering questions about is Stetson Bennett the guy? And I said, before the SEC championship game, he had a 20-3 touchdown to interception ratio. How many five-star guys in the country or four-star guys in the country have that kind of game where we go, you know what? Bad game. No worries. He's going to play great the next game. You were literally asking me and Reese, should we bench him? Does he need to be sat down? Does it need to be JT?
I'm so like, ridiculous.
My head's going to explode. Like, yeah. But it's a former walk-on. That's exactly why, and that's why he's been treated like that. He's got one more game. Dude, he could go down as one of the best stories in the history of college football, and you write a 30-for-30 about it. I mean, it could be one of the best stories ever, from walk-on to leave to come back to what he's done.
And we'll see if he's able to write that chapter or not. David, always a lot of fun. I will see you in Indianapolis. I'll save your prediction for pregame kickoff on the pregame show before championship game. Huh?
Week zero, I gave my prediction.
That's true. Oh, last thing. Here's what I'll say. I'll now pat David on the back virtually here. Week zero, David said, national championship game, Alabama, Georgia. He said, Alabama beats Georgia for the SEC championship, and the Dogs get their revenge in the national championship game. He said that before one ball had been placed on a tee. So kudos to you, my friend.
It ain't over yet.
Well, just getting this far.
All right. Now I just got to get the last one.
Just getting this far is a bit of a consolation prize. David, talk to you soon, man.
See you, brother.